This is David Honnell, and you're listening to the Petapixel Photography Podcast with Sharky James.
Welcome to the Petapixel Photography Podcast, episode 54. Google says copyright takedowns have doubled. In this episode, Google reports a doubling of copyright takedowns, World Press Photo tosses 16% of finalists this year, Lee introduces the Superstopper, Sony debuts its wireless lighting control system, Profoto reinvents the beauty dish, photographers at Google aims to inspire, Instagram comes to Windows Mobile, an anti-drone bazooka is in the works. All that and more in episode 54 of the Petapixel Photography Podcast. Thank you so much, David, for opening the show. I greatly appreciate it. David Honnell is a top photojournalist whose work has been seen in Newsweek, National Geographic, The Guardian, People, The New York Times, and many, many other places. And he's also the founder of Honnell Photo, a light products company popular with those who are into off-camera flash, also known as OCF. They make a number of cool things to help you modify the light that's coming out of your small flashes, from grids to gobos and an entire kit of gels. To check that all out and to learn more about David and his photography, head on over to honnellphoto.com. That's H-O-N-L photo.com. And I'd like to thank you for joining us here in episode 54 of the Petapixel Photography Podcast. We appreciate you all so much, and thank you all for subscribing, rating, and reviewing us in iTunes or wherever else you listen to us. We also appreciate you telling your friends about us on social media or wherever else and helping to spread the word about this podcast. Okay, with that, I'm your host, Sharky James. A little bit under the weather this episode. Let's hit it. According to search giant Google, they're seeing a huge increase in the number of takedown requests it receives from copyright owners who seek to get their content removed from the search engine. Amazingly, there were a staggering 76 million requests in February of 2016, double what it was the year before. Over 76 million URLs on nearly 70,000 domains were requested to be removed by more than 6,400 separate copyright owners. That is just amazing to me. According to CNET, the takedown requests received by Google fall under the Digital Millennium Copyright Act, aka the DMCA, which was established in 1998, and that allows content producers like you and I to get said content removed from offending websites, mostly. Now, if you'd like a great primer on how to create properly formatted DMCA takedown requests, head on over to the show notes for episode 54 at petapixel.com/podcast. Over the years, I've had to send out DMCA takedown notices when contacting the person directly didn't work out, and for the most part, it goes smoothly. Website hosting companies don't want to be responsible for the stolen content of its users, so they get rid of that stuff pretty darn quickly. Most of them, at least. But it's on a case-by-case, host-by-host basis. And it also depends on who you're contacting, who takes the request at the time. But most of the time, they're going to remove it for you. And as far as the United States goes, if they don't remove it, they're liable for damages. So there's financial incentive for them to comply with the DMCA, and that's great. Don't forget, as content producers, even if you're not making money with your photography, you have a right for your content not to be stolen. And of course, if there is value to your photography, you want to register it with their U.S. Copyright Office. If you don't, you can only get actual damages. But if you do register it, you can get a whole lot of money. Copyright claims are fought in federal court. And if a judge decides that the company stealing your photos was doing so in an egregious manner, you could get a lot of money. I think it's up to $150,000 U.S. per infringement. Not per photo, per infringement. So it could be in three different places on a website, or who knows where, a brochure, some other printed piece, a storefront window, whatever, and you can get up to $150,000 per use. Now, most people aren't going to get that, but you're going to get a good chunk of change. However, most people that are stealing photos know that they're never going to be sued, and that most people haven't registered their photos, and they go ahead and do it anyhow. But a DMCA takedown notice is a great way, at very least, to get it removed from their website. So there's that. Next. Our culture as a whole is short on patience. I know I am. We want instant gratification these days. You know, we've been trained to be that way as technology improves our lives. And I'm doing air quotes here. I'm not sure it's actually much of an improvement. We seem to be pretty darn hectic and don't have patience for anything anymore. So Lee's new Super Stopper 15-stop ND filter, which is capable of turning a 2-second exposure into one that's over 17 hours, is not likely to be something I'm going to buy. Now, one of our listeners, Stephen Thompson, famous for his use of Lee filters, maybe, but not me. For those not familiar with them, neutral density filters are like sunglasses for your lenses. Basically, you use them when you have too much light and you want to cut a lot of that out. So if you're shooting a waterfall at 2 p.m. and you can't get a slow enough shutter speed to create that really smooth, cottony look in the water, you break out your ND filter. Some are available in a certain amount of stops and others are variable. It's going to depend on what you want and your style of shooting, and also how much money you have. Lee's Super Stopper joins its Big Stopper, which cuts out 10 stops of light, and the Little Stopper, which cuts out 6 stops. And of course, a stop is a doubling or halving of your exposure, but in this case, each stop is a reduction of 1 stop. So that's getting rid of half the light with each stop, and that in turn slows down your shutter speed by half. Of this new product, the company says, quote, "The Super Stopper is designed for use in bright conditions during the middle of the day, a time that's traditionally considered unsuitable for photography because of the harsh, contrasty nature of the light. However, with the Super Stopper filter fitted, the softness that arises from any movement contrasts pleasingly with any areas of bright light, creating an effect rarely seen in photography before now." End quote. You know, I get asked all the time by people who are frustrated with their photography about what they can do to create something different. ND filter. If you want creative images that are different than anything that you've done until now, and different than what 99% of the people out there are doing, try the ultra-slow shutter speeds that an ND filter gives you. With a slow enough shutter speed and your camera mounted atop a sturdy tripod, you can not only blur water and create stunning images, you can also completely remove people from a scene. Not a lot of people know that. You know, you can shoot somewhere crowded with tourists, and with a long enough exposure, they'll all disappear. It's because they're not in the frame long enough to be recorded because they're moving. If you challenge yourself, you can create a ghost town out of just about any place that you go. You'll be able to see the world void of people in instances where there are usually a lot of people, and that is something different. Or you can do as our friend Matt Granger did recently and make everyone in the frame disappear but one person. But you're going to have to make sure that they stand really, really still. And it's not going to take anywhere near 17 hours to do that with this filter, though. If your exposure would normally give you 1/2000th of a second shutter speed in bright sunlight, Lee's Super Stopper will give you a 15-second exposure. And that might be enough time to remove everyone from the frame, except for your subject who could stay still for about 15 seconds. Hopefully. So as long as people are moving along and aren't standing still in a frame, that should completely remove them. And if you know someone who can stay still for a good period of time, you can make them the only person that exists in, let's say, Times Square. That would be pretty cool. Well, I guess it depends on whether or not anyone else is standing around, of course. You want to do it not when people are waiting at a stoplight. The Super Stopper is made of high-quality optical glass, of course, has a very minimal color cast, and includes a metal protective case. They're going to be available for the 100mm, the 7.5, and the SW150 Lee filter product lines. And while pricing and availability haven't been announced just yet, DP Review reports that the SW150 series version will go for approximately $175 US. So they're not super cheap, but if you want to do photography that very few people are doing, this is what you want to get. I think it was pretty obvious that with as popular as their cameras have been, Sony would eventually offer a wireless lighting control system. No doubt about it. Because why not? They're on fire. Well, at the WPPI 2016 conference and trade show in Las Vegas, Nevada, that's the Wedding and Portrait Photographers International, by the way, the company showed off a prototype of an upcoming system which includes a wireless radio transmitter as well as a wireless radio receiver. They have a maximum range of about 30 meters, that's roughly 98 feet, a flash sync speed of 1/250th of a second, support for high-speed sync if you want to go way over 1/250th of a second, and photographers will be able to control up to 15 separate flash units assigned to 5 different groups. You know, 15 flashes sounds crazy, but there are a lot of third-party companies out there making really cheap flash units, and we'll see if they're compatible with these Sony triggers or not, but I suspect you're going to see more and more of them out there. And while you might think it's crazy to have 15 flashes, and most people aren't, multiple flashes is the way to go. If you don't have ginormous studio strobes that you're lugging out to the field, you can gang 3 or 4 of them together and put out a lot of light in a softbox, an octobank, an umbrella, whatever. So here in 2016, we have so many options available to us, and it's nice to see that Sony's coming on board with their own system. The really cool feature, though, these units is that you can control the output of each flash manually from the transmitter should you choose to do so. That's really helpful when you have a flash up high on a stand and you don't want to have to go up there and constantly be messing with it. Now, we don't know how much these are going to cost, nor when we're going to see them exactly, but the company says that their wireless lighting control system, as they're calling it, will be available through retailers sometime in the summer of 2016. So if you shoot Sony and you've been waiting for the mothership to deploy its own system, the wait is nearly over. Up until now, the go-to seems to have been the Fotix Odin units. A lot of people really, really like those. But now we're going to have actual Sony-branded units available. And this is obviously further proof that Sony is building their system out all over the place. One thing I'd like to see Sony do, though, is put some time into improving their batteries. I get that they're small, and thus they can't have a lot of capacity compared to the bigger units available for the DSLRs, but there's got to be a way to pack more power in there. That would be nice. Next. Beauty dishes are, well, a thing of beauty. I know, you saw that coming, but it's okay. Let's move on. People tend to overlook beauty dishes for a softbox or an octobank, but they produce a nice quality of light, and anyone serious about portrait photography should consider having one of them in their arsenal. And now is perhaps a good time to have another look at them, as premium lighting brand Profoto, that's code for expensive, by the way, has reimagined their classic metal beauty dish that dates back to the 1980s. You know, there hasn't been a whole lot of innovation in beauty dishes. They're the same basic shape, and they're usually made out of metal, and they have been for many decades now. This new version, available in both white and silver from Profoto, is both lightweight and now collapsible. According to the company, quote, "When the Profoto soft light reflector was introduced in 1980, fashion photographers soon nicknamed it the beauty dish due to its unique ability to bring out the beauty of the model. Since then, it has grown to become one of the most iconic tools for creating a creamy yet crisp light, often referred to as a beauty light," end quote. The new OCF beauty dish is designed for the Profoto B1 and B2 flash systems. It can't be used with other models due to heat issues, they're saying. And rather than a metal build, this new version uses durable fabrics that allow it to be collapsed and carried in a small bag that fits in just about any small backpack. Mounting the 2-foot diameter beauty dish involves using a patent-pending design that lets the dish snap onto their OCF speed ring, and the entire system weighs in at just 1.1 pounds. If you're into the Profoto B1 or B2 systems for big bucks, and boy are they expensive, you'll be happy to hear that you can pick up one of these new beauty dishes for just $179 US. It looks to be a great modifier, and whether you get one of these or you get a beauty dish in general, I would encourage everyone to look into integrating that sometime into their lighting toolkit, because it really does produce a really, really beautiful light. Next. I didn't get a chance to mention it in the last episode, but the winners have been announced for this year's World Press Photo Awards. And amazingly, despite all the controversy of some 20% of finalists being disqualified in last year's contest, 16% were DQ'd this year. I tell you, it's the age we live in. Everything is photoshopped, and people do it without even thinking anymore. And apparently, even when they clearly know what the rules are and that you can't alter photos in ways that'll get you kicked out of the contest, they still do it. It just blows my mind that anyone thinks that they're going to sneak this past the judges when they are specifically looking for that kind of shenanigans to happen. Are these photographers new? I mean, the judges have access to your raw files. They know what was there when you pressed the button and what the final result was, and they compare the two. They can see what you did. I mean, seriously, you would think that if you were submitting your photos to the World Press Photo Awards and knew that last year's top winner, the top winner, was stripped of his award, embarrassingly, that you would play by the rules. Nope. The organization came out with a code of ethics after last year's nonsense, and despite that, 16% of finalists were tossed this year. That is just amazing. Now, Time writes that this lower percentage indicates that WPP's efforts have, quote, paid off, end quote. But seriously, come on, that is a joke. They've only reduced the amount of cheating in this contest by 20%. And that's not their fault. They don't control what's being submitted to them. That's completely on the photographers. So of the 174 finalists in this year's contest, 7 were DQ'd for cloning parts of photos, and 22 were kicked for what they're referring to as extreme processing. WPP even went so far as to produce videos ahead of this contest showing what's acceptable and what's not, and yet this still happened. Contest director Lars Boring tells Time that they received, quote, a lot of apologies, end quote, from photographers when they were informed that they were being removed from the contest for breaking the rules, and some actually made excuses that they had mistakenly submitted photos that they intended for gallery shows. I mean, come on, that's ridiculous. Now, you may recall that WPP published a report in 2015 revealing that 25% of photojournalists admit to altering content occasionally, 52% said that they sometimes stage photos, and 51% admitted to enhancing their photos by altering the contrast, hue, tone, and saturation. Now, the latter, of course, is really subjective because every camera processes JPEGs differently. Most photojournalists, however, don't shoot RAW. Sorry, Jared. So when you're processing photos in Turtle Slow Lightroom or any other program, things are going to be open to interpretation when it comes to doing things like color correction, hue, contrast, etc. When I was a photojournalist, I'd shoot in RAW and later try to remember the scene in my head. You know, you don't always get it right, but you try your best. You know, you kind of know what colors certain things are and you go from there. You're not trying to mess around with anything or interpret something artistically to make it look better. You're just trying to make it look how you shot it, or try your best to do so at least. So while there was indeed a 20% drop in disqualifications in this year's contest, it's hard to be excited about 16% of finalists in this once prestigious contest being tossed. Bottom line here, you really can't truly believe what you see anymore. You just can't. Next. One thing that you've heard me say here on the show before is that there's something to be learned from just about everyone. I really truly believe that. And hopefully you're learning some things here on the podcast from me as well. Now, imagine if I could learn from each of you. It would be amazing to learn just one thing from tens of thousands of people. Imagine what kind of photographer I could be then. But hey, that's just not possible from a time standpoint, right? In the meantime, though, there's so much great information online. And one of them is called Photographers at Google. And it's just that. Photographers at Google. Imagine that. Very aptly named. It's part of the company's Talks at Google program, in which notable people in various industries come to Google HQ to share their knowledge. Well, over the past several years, over 40 photographers have given hour-long presentations with subjects ranging from the artistic side of photography to discussing specific photo projects that reveal something about our world. Some of our favorite past speakers have included the great Art Wolf, Vincent Versace, Trey Ratcliffe, Joe McNally, and Ben Von Wong. Those are just 5 of the more than 40 who've given presentations so far, and I feel like if you took some time to watch them, you'd see a measurable benefit. Knowing why to do something is just as important as how to do something, and these speakers have given invaluable advice which will help you grow as a photographer. It's such a great resource, and I think it's worth your time. I've seen about a dozen of them so far, and I'm slowly making my way through each and every one of them. Because like I said, you will learn something that you did not know before. Now for the link to Photographers at Google. Well, you can Google it, Or you can hit the show notes for episode 54 at petapixel.com/podcast. I really believe you're going to learn a lot from these. If you're a Windows 10 mobile user, the 70 of you out there that have Windows phones, and have been feeling left out when it comes to Instagram and sharing your photos, perhaps promoting your business, etc., you're in luck. According to Windows Central, Instagram is now available for Windows 10 mobile smartphones and is currently available in beta as they work the kinks out, but it's off to a decent start. Basic functionality is there in the app, but there are some instability issues that they've found while testing it. Specifically, they ran into problems while taking photos and using the editor to post images, so that's going to need to be worked out. But hey, it's in beta. That's part of the deal there. If you have a Windows 10 mobile phone, you can download the app over in the Microsoft Store, but there's no word yet as to whether the app will remain in the store during this period or whether it's going to be yanked after a certain number of downloads. So get on that now if you're interested, you Windows users. And actually, Windows phones aren't too bad these days, so I really shouldn't make fun of them. There's just not a whole lot of them out there at the moment. But go ahead and check this out. Instagram, as I've said before, is a wonderful way to promote your photography these days. It's not about Facebook as much anymore. Instagram is where it's at. Next. Ever since people have spoiled the fun for the rest of us by doing really stupid things with their drones, we've seen anti-drone measures in the form of ammunition, net and web-slinging drones, specially trained eagles of all things, and now perhaps the coolest solution, a futuristic bazooka that fires net rockets at rogue drones. I know, right? Isn't that pretty cool? The defensive weapon called the Skywall 100 is being developed by a UK company, Openworks Engineering. It's sleek, it's black, and it looks like a weapon from a sci-fi movie. And if you have a drone, you might want to watch out for it. It's small enough and light enough to be used by a single operator and uses compressed air to shoot the anti-drone projectile fairly quietly, so it's unlikely to cause panic in a crowd of people. Remember, these things are designed for law enforcement, anti-terror personnel, etc., to take out drones that might be up to no good, and if they're flying over crowds of people, you don't want to cause panic. It uses an advanced targeting system to locate offending drones, and then as it rapidly closes in on said drone, it deploys a net, captures it, deploys a parachute, and lowers it safely to the ground. And if you see the video of this thing, you're going to be like, wow. We have definitely entered the future here. It has a range of 100 meters and a reload time of just 8 seconds. So if the drone operator is stupid and doesn't get the heck out of there after a missile was just fired at his drone, then he's just asking for it because 8 seconds later, your drone is taking a ride to the ground. I'd like to thank you all for listening to episode 54 of the Petapixel Photography Podcast. Don't forget to check us out at petapixel.com/podcast for the show notes and to see what else we have for you. If you head on over there, you can leave us a voicemail question that we can answer here on the show. Or if you don't feel comfortable leaving a voicemail, feel free to email me at lensshark@gmail.com. And if you'd like to connect with me personally, and I'm hoping you would, go ahead and hit me up on Twitter, Instagram, or Facebook where I'm Lensshark. That's LENSSHARK. All right, with that, I'll see you all in episode 55. Well, it's F8 and 250 of a second outside. It's time to shoot.
Please subscribe to the Petapixel Photography Podcast. My daddy is the host.